2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Outside, this is KSL Outdoors,
brought to you by Bear River Lodge.
2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure.
KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes
on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Here we go into hour number two, and yes, fishermen out there, more fish talk in this hour. Navi, as he actually texted me, he didn't call me, he texted me yesterday to let me know he was going to be on the road doing his research on the river somewhere. And I told him all the fishing we were going to talk about. I said, go ahead and go fishing. We're going to talk fishing today, which he knew our fishing fans out there would really love. So Navi's on the road. Russ Smith is with me from Sky Call, and he's at the compound there in Sugar House. Good morning. Maybe. He's having some challenges with the app, I think, this morning. I do know that Bob Grove is with us from Road Tripping with Bob and Mark, and Mark will join us here coming up in about 20 minutes. But good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Great to have you, and thanks for hanging in for the entire program today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
This trip you're going to take, we were talking last half hour with Ray Golden, really sounds like it's going to be something. I know about Cathedral in the Desert at Lake Powell. Are there other things on your list that you know about?
I don't, but I've been paying attention to all the articles that are being posted about that. So we're going to make a list of them, but Cathedral in the Desert is definitely one of them we want to go see. But I've never been on the lake when it's been this low, so I'm excited to go see it.
Yeah. And I like what Ray said, and just a reminder to everybody that it's kind of like running a particular river. It's different when you've got, the spring runoff than it is later in the season, and it's a little different ride each time if you're going for rapids. And so I would think the same is true what Ray said about Lake Powell. It looks different when the water's low than it does when the water's high, but just as spectacular. If you've never been to Lake Powell, I'm sure you would love it with all of the beauty that it has, unmatched, unparalleled, I think, anywhere in the world. Let's get, we're talking about low water and the drought situation around the state. We're going to continue to talk fishing here. Randy Opplinger, the sport fish coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources, joins us once again. It's gotten to be a regular visit with you, Ray, which we don't mind. We actually love checking in with you, but it's sort of bad news that we're having to change the regulations and the limits at even more lakes and reservoirs around the state.
Yeah, it's nice talking to you too, but yeah, this drought thing's getting a little bit old for us as well. But yeah, we kind of went into the summer figuring which ones were the ones that we just absolutely knew at the beginning of the summer based on water levels, talking to the water users, so those who manage the dams, that kind of thing. We knew we were going to have some problems with those water bodies. And then we had a bunch of others that we've been kind of just watching through the summer and talking and just seeing how conditions develop. And, this last round, I think, has about, six or eight waters in the state that we're kind of adding to this list. We've done some emergency fishing regulation changes to liberalize harvest limits and give anglers a chance to take home some fish. But these are ones that we've kind of seen through the summer just get maybe a little bit lower than we were expecting. And we decided it was time to call it and, liberalize the limits on these waters and give, again, anglers the chance to take home some additional fish from those as well.
Well, the bottom line is you just as soon see those fish be consumed and caught by fishermen than have them just die because of a lack of oxygen, or worse than that, a lack of water altogether.
Absolutely. That's exactly what our logic is. To us, we want anglers to have a chance to catch fish and take fish home if they want to do it. And if they're dead, anglers can't do that. So this is us giving that opportunity for anglers to take some fish home before Mother Nature takes them some other means through overheating or lack of oxygen.
Before we talk about the changes in limits, and I worry a little bit when we have a list this long that we will cause confusion more than help people, so we'll always direct them to the website, which is wildlife.utah.gov, and all of your regulation changes are there. So if you're headed to a specific water, reservoir, lake, stream, whatever it is, check there first so that you know specifically what those changes are, what the regulations are. We don't want anybody to get themselves in trouble by being confused by any information we pass along. I am curious, however, and we didn't talk about this the last time, what are your concerns about having to restock all of these fish if and when our water situation takes a turn for the better?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we're seeing how it plays out. So, I mean, we've definitely been making some changes in how we stock fish as a result of these drought conditions. These water bodies that we've been doing these emergency regulation changes on, they're ones that we haven't been stocking this summer because we didn't want to put fish into a water body that we knew we were going to have problems in. But what we've done that kind of in return is those fish that were originally scheduled from these waters have been put into another water in the state. So they're still out there. They're still available for anglers to catch. As we get into the fall, we're going to look at these waters that received a few extra fish, and we're probably going to pull some of those back a little bit in the stocking and maybe put those fish that we're going to go into these waters that have already received extra fish into these drought waters where we're doing these emergency regulation changes with the thought that, you know, as fall comes, hopefully a little bit more precipitation, that fish will be able to survive. So we could begin getting maybe a few extra fish into these lakes to help kind of reseed them and jumpstart them. So hopefully next year, if people have a great fishing year and hopefully a year with a lot of water.
Sounds like a crazy puzzle you're trying to put together there with pieces missing, actually. All right. Without, again, causing a lot of confusion, talk to me about the lakes or reservoirs you've added to this list.
Yeah, like I said, you know, I think we've got six or eight. So you know, for those of you who are familiar with the Division of Wildlife Resources kind of region structure, if you're looking at the central part of the state, Fairview Lakes in Sanpete County, McClellan Reservoir, which is in Utah County. Those are two where we've increased our trout limit to 8 trout total, so we've doubled the trout limit on those. Mono Reservoir in UAB County, we've increased the daily limit to a combined total of 20 fish. That includes any wiper, largemouth bass, and smallmouth bass, so that's kind of an aggregate across those species, 20 fish. Palisade Reservoir, we increased the daily limit to a combined total of 20 for wiper, trout, and black crappie. And then at Payson Lake and Town Reservoir, we increased the daily limit to 8 trout for both of those. Then we got a couple in northern Utah, so kind of the Cache Valley area. We've got Newton Reservoir. We've increased the daily limit to 100 bluegill, 100 yellow perch, and 100 black crappie. And then Pine View, just kind of a big one at Weber County, we increased the daily limit to 100 bluegill, 100 perch, 40 black crappie, and 48 bullheads. So those are kind of the big changes that we've made in this round. You know, you've hit on it. I guess one more is in the southeastern part of the state, Monticello Lake down San Juan County. It's another one where we've doubled the trout limit to 8 trout. And then you've kind of hit on this already, but this is our third round of this. So I definitely encourage people to get on the website. There's probably about 20 more waters in the state where we've done some regulation changes previous to this round, and those ones are all outlined, and it should clearly kind of explain what the current limits are.
100 bluegill and 100 yellow perch at Newton and Pineview. What was the limit before?
We basically doubled them on those waters. So, you know, you're looking at kind of 50 or so, which, I mean, it's a lot of fish, but those are species that are reproduce a lot, and they could have extremely high densities. And again, you know, we're worried about losing these fish. So, you know, there's a lot of them, and we just assume give anglers a chance to clear them out, take them home.
Yeah. Any other advice you would give to fishermen that are going to head to these waters?
I think, you know, the biggest advice is, you know, like, be prepared to take home some fish. We would appreciate it if people took home some fish. And then, you know, beyond that, I think at the same time, you have a chance to take home additional fish. But I think as the summer goes on, there's going to be fewer and fewer fish in these waters as people harvest more and more. And I feel like hot temperatures and fishing don't always go the best. So it could be kind of slow fishing, but if you can get into them, you can get into them and take a lot home.
Yeah, and one of the things that's been tough with slot limits and, you know, limits put while you're trying to build these populations for fishermen was they just didn't get to keep enough to take home for dinner. So this should put some smiles on people's faces, even though it's a concern when you look down the road about, you know, what Mother Nature is going to give us for a winter next year and what that means for next year's fishing. In the meantime, the Division of Wildlife doing all they can to try and make sure that both the fish and the fishermen are taking care of this fishing season. Randy, as always, thank you so much, not just for what you're doing right now, but what you do every day behind the scenes.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
Randy Oplinger is the Sport Fish Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife Resources. Again, go to wildlife.utah.gov, and you'll find that list. And then if you've got a specific spot you want to go, or maybe this list will actually help you target a place maybe you haven't fished before, go there and look up that list. We'll take a break. When we come back, road tripping with Bob and Mark, one of my favorite topics, burgers.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
One, two. Time to do a little road tripping with Bob and Mark. Roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com.
On the road again.
Today, we're not just going to get on the road again. We're going to go looking for good burgers on the back roads of Utah. Some of them not so much on the back roads, but Mark Wade joins the conversation now along with Bob Grove. Russ Smith is still here because you and I, Russ, have experienced some of these burgers on the road. Some of them, you need to bring the Pepto-Bismol or something so that you don't have to make too many stops after the burger. But
I would say most of them, for a girly man like me, I have to cut them up.
Oh, yeah.
Cut them in half. Work on them.
Well, Mark sent me a list of a few here in the northern part of the state, and the one I haven't experienced, and I don't think you have either, Mark, but it's a place called Lucky 13, and they have one they call the Big Benny. Let me just describe it to you guys. This one looks like you would die if you ate the entire thing. It's a foot tall with house-smoked bacon, ham, cheddar, Swiss, caramelized onions, some Lucky 13 sauce, of course, and the 28 ounces of fresh ground chuck. Yes, I said 28 ounces, $26.50 for the Big Benny. So we thought we'd talk about what makes a good burger, and I guess that would be, you know, individual choice. And I'll start with you, Mark. What makes for a good burger?
Well, you know, these days with all of the health conscious people in the world, and I'm a little bit of one of them, you love avocado on a burger, and some places will throw avocado on there, but I love caramelized onions. I love the mushrooms that have been, you know, grilled and stacked on there.
That's right.
And so those would be three ingredients that I like. I'll leave you guys to throw in some others you like.
Yeah, Russ? I like the avocado, by the way.
You know what? Quality ground beef. There's
makes
just
a huge difference.
Something about that. You know, eat a fast food burger the day before, and then you go in with one of these with the quality ground beef,
good
and juicy. Oh, heaven on earth.
Well, in places like Maddox, which made this list in Brigham City that many people may be familiar with, obviously have quality ground beef, but they also have a buffalo burger there that's made out of buffalo meat, which is fantastic. I've had one of those actually out on Antelope Island several years ago. Bob, what about you for making of a good hamburger?
It's got to have an onion ring on it.
Oh, an onion ring! Not just the onions.
Bingo!
Yeah, like a triple patty, a couple of big onion rings, maybe a jalapeno.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Put in the kitchen sink.
Gosh,
there you go.
Now you're making me hungry.
And you know what, Bob? It's got to be beer batter dipped onion ring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
I want my arteries pulsating as I talk about it. You know?
That's why you do it. One of these that made the list, Mark, you have eaten at. That's in Torrey, Utah. It's a place called Slackers.
You know, you pass through town there, and it is what we like. What we're trying to highlight is some of these places around the state that are not the change, right? They're not the usuals, and Slackers is one of those. And they have onion rings, which Bob was talking about, that are to die for. And they'll stack a burger about not a foot high, but maybe, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches high, and just lay all those ingredients on there. And they have so many different kinds of burgers there. You know, I love blue cheese.
Me too.
On a burger.
Yep.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really zings for me. They have a good one there. And so blue cheese and bacon, right? We didn't mention that.
Ray's has to make this list, Bob, right?
Oh, yeah. I was about to say that you can't have a list of hamburger joints in Utah without including Ray's.
And that's that's in Green River.
That's after you've camped at the Green River camp spot or whatever you want to do, you head on. You know, our good buddy Jed Eads and I, after a big rappelling trip in the swell, all we could think about at the end of that day was heading over to Ray's and getting one of those big old juicy all-American burgers.
Yeah.
It's walking distance to the state park. It's close.
And Russ, you and I actually experienced one in Antimony that we just stumbled on one of our trips back from Bryce Canyon in Ruby's.
Yeah. That was a great burger.
What was the name of that place, Bob? I think you looked it up.
It was Merck Cafe and RV Park.
Yeah, they got a little bit of everything in there.
Funny. Merck's Cafe and RV Park doubles as the post office, I'm sure.
So our listeners are saying, where is Antimony?
Yeah.
That's a hard place to find.
Yes.
So where is it, Russ? Don't raise the question and not have an answer.
Well, yeah. If you're at Bryce Canyon or at Ruby's Inn, okay, and you're going to head home, you're going to go north out of the park, of course, that's the only road there. When you get to the crossroads there, trust me on this.
Just go straight.
Go straight.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You can't go straight. It doesn't go anywhere. Oh, yes, it does.
It does.
Isn't that called like John's Valley? Is that John Valley Road or something?
Yeah,
like
I believe it is, yeah.
But, it's a roundabout there now, Russ. Don't go straight. You'll drive right over the top
tell me
of the
that.
Roundabout.
Yeah.
Roundabouts are a disease on our roads.
Mark, whatever. We always talk about going road tripping with Bob and Mark, but Mark, food is always a part of road tripping, isn't it?
You know, it's one of our favorite things to do three times a day, right? But one of the places we also like is down in Beaver. There's a restaurant down there called El Bambi. Been around since the world began, it seems like. And the guy who owns the place is the only cook.
Yeah.
And the breakfast there is incredible, but they've got the great burgers as well.
One more, Bob, real quick, that's on your list.
Well, there's Nemo's in Escalante on Highway 12. So if you're going, that's actually been ranked as one of the top burger joints in the state. So if you're heading on Highway 12, throw on the brakes in Escalante and get yourself a Nemo burger.
Pull on the brakes and grab yourself a burger. I love it. Road tripping with Bob and Mark.com. That's fun conversation and just some ideas for burgers next time you're on the road. Going to take a break when we come back. Roger Eggett, he'll tell you about his burgers up at Bear River Lodge. Stay right there.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.